Welcome to East Meets West, episode 162. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And it's Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day, Roger. Yes, and neither one of us are fathers. How ironic.
Iron so far awake.
Not sure what that was, but okay.
That was just stupid is what that was. That's what happens when, while you're trying to do a podcast, a Twitter message pops up from the owner of the Hollywood Hookers fantasy baseball team asking if you can approve a trade of Matt LaPorta from Hollywood to Toledo for Toledo's third round pick.
Toledo. Toledo doesn't deserve a pick. I don't know.
Yes. Well, now, even though Hollywood, just so I don't forget to note this, Hollywood has Toledo's third round pick in next year's draft.
Hmm. How long has that fantasy league been going? 5, 6 years?
Well, it's been going straight since 2001.
Holy.
And it was, that was a pickup of a league that had run from 1984 to 1989.
Wow. It's a long run.
Yeah. It's subreddit.com/TBA. I don't know why you would be interested in, but...
If you are.
If you were. I said Hollywood has Toledo's third round pick, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just make sure I note that correctly. So anyway, yes, don't do fantasy baseball, commissioner duties, and podcast at the same time. That's the lesson there, folks. We wanted to start with some responses. From the blog at subreddit.com/EMW, Sean O'Hara says, Counselor Choi makes a lot more sense if you think of her as a political officer put aboard to monitor the crew's ideological purity. Why would the ship's therapist have a chair next to the captain?
That's really kind of creepy. It's very...
It totally changes everything.
Well, if you look at it in kind of that fashion, in a very Soviet era way, it's kind of the all powerful state looking over your shoulder,
absolutely
making sure you're in line.
They would call her a counselor, right? They wouldn't call her ideological purist.
No,
they'd call
her something like
counselor.
You would give them a euphemism to put them at ease. But what's interesting is, in many respects, a lot of the episodes that deal with Star Trek, in some ways, can be construed as kind of not totalitarian, but very authoritarian. I mean, even though it's not, I mean, there's all these kinds of orders and stuff that they need to follow and that are constantly kind of drilled into their head by the counselor. It's like, you know, Captain, you have to remember. It's like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Well, yeah, because it's militaristic, right? So you're always following this kind of militaristic tradition, which is very authoritarian by its nature. But also, on top of that, the Federation has no problems, right? I mean, that's the premise of Star Trek, is like,
yeah,
we've solved
a utopian.
All humans' problems. But that's exactly what authoritarian governments try to project as well. There are no problems in our dictatorship. The great dictator has solved them all. So you basically replace the great dictator with the Federation. You got the same thing going on.
Yeah, and in many respects, it's kind of why the Next Generation, I think, for majority of the episodes, weren't that interesting to me. Because it just presupposed that, you know, I mean, if you think about it, you know, the Enterprise was almost like a missionary group, kind of proselytizing their brand of morality across the universe. Oh, you can't do, you know, kind of lecturing one race about how to treat another race.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, our own race has evolved beyond that. But, you know, you're still in this savage, you know, pre-industrial. And it's just like, wow, really? And then you get the Q and that kind of mixes it up. And then, like, later on, you get the Borg and stuff. And, you know, and there's kind of like, you know, there's actual fissures between, you know, various levels of you know, Federation government and Starfleet and, you know, intelligence group in Star Trek, Section 37 or something.
Oh, right. The secret thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's something like that. I can't remember
exactly. But, you know, suddenly all this stuff starts spilling out. It's like, hey, this is actually kind of cool. It's, you know, it's interesting. It's
well,
not
that,
like...
that's what was great about the Q character in The Next Generation, right? Was that he was a foil to all of this self-righteousness that otherwise would have been absolutely
overbearing.
Like, it got better over the years, but Picard and Wesley Crusher... and it was mostly those two were really like put out there as these like holier than thou characters. And no disrespect to Patrick Stewart or Wil Wheaton, who did a fantastic job playing them. That's the way they were written at the beginning.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know? And I mean, it was just these kind of like, ugh, I hate you both. It was my first reaction, which totally changed. I actually ended up liking and respecting the Wesley Crusher character, and of course, loved Picard.
I still think Picard of all of them. I think mainly due to Patrick Stewart's amazing acting abilities, was given like this. Originally, they kind of had this narrow band, you know, approach to his character.
He hates and children, and he's very crusty. Yeah.
And then they realize, holy crap, Patrick Stewart's this amazing actor, and they start giving this huge range of you know, emotions. Like the time when, you know, I keep going back to this episode where he basically lives out the life of an alien civilization as one of their elders.
You won't shut up about how that's your favorite episode, but yes, okay, it's a fantastic episode.
The second episode, I think, is up there is when he's caught by the Cardassians because he's on a secret, you know, sabotage mission by the Federation, and he has to undergo the torture, you know, the whole I see only three lights. How many lights are there? I only see three lights.
Right.
It's just amazing. But, I mean, I think that's why Deep Space Nine, I thought, I kept watching that, you know, episode after episode, because those characters were all flawed from the beginning. There were no angels. There were no amazing, you know, saints that came down from above. These are, you know, Sisko was flawed. Bajor, the planet they were surrounding, was flawed. The Cardassians, everyone. You know what I mean? That's why I think BSG was so roundly applauded, because you had these people with human flaws that weren't perfect.
Yeah, I agree. I think. But I will submit this. I think the restriction that Roddenberry put on Next Generation, where humans had solved all their problems and couldn't have normal human conflicts, while it put the shackles on the writers, made their life hell, made a lot of bad episodes happen because they were just casting about, also forced them to make some of the best episodes in science fiction television, maybe even in television. And those are the ones you're talking about, the torture episode,
yeah,
the living a life, even the alien race with the Data yelling Musaka is waking, you know, all freaky like, you know, was a fantastic concept. So it really pushed the creativity. But when you kind of look at an easy to get into and easier to enjoy every episode, then you're right. Deep Space Nine was, although I don't know if it ever reached the heights that Next Generation did, because they weren't pushed to it by that restriction.
Yeah, but that said, I think what they did was they put all those human flaws and they projected them into alien, you know, beings or situations where they could essentially be the metaphor or the allegory for the entire theme of the show.
Deep Space Nine did suffer from the same thing that Next Generation did, which was when they were out of ideas, they went to the holodeck, and those episodes always sucked. They didn't suck as bad always in Next Generation, but they were generally the best ones were only average. Deep Space Nine, I can't think of a single holodeck episode that I liked.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, as I was watching the Star Trek animated series, and I realized that's the first time the holodecks I've actually ever seen it was in the cartoon first, before they
really? Uh-huh.
So, and it's like, holy crap, they never used that in the actual Enterprise, because supposedly there was a rec room that had holography and, you know, basically a holodeck.
Like a primitive holodeck, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, wow, they should have used this in the original series too. But
they couldn't afford the effects, I'm sure.
Well, that's what effects? You just shoot it. You shoot it like in the gangster.
Once you get into the holodeck, it's pretty easy. Yeah, you just show a blank room with a bunch of grids. You're right. It's actually not that much of an effects, is it? Well, let's finish Sean's comment here. The two best Troy moments. See if you agree with this. Moment number one: the episode where the Enterprise is in an accident. And Troy is the senior most officer on the bridge. Ensign Roe, by the way.
Oh, which I love.
Love
her. I love her.
Loved her in Battlestar Galactica. Love her in True Blood. Anyway, Ensign Roe and O'Brien get the computers working and report that the warp core is in danger of breaching. Troy's response? What does that mean? Roe and O'Brien exchange looks like, do you think we could kill her and make it look like she died in the accident?
Well, it's weird because it's essentially, you know, you're put in a senior position without necessarily having to go through all the things that I think a standard Starfleet, you know, recruit or ensign would need to, like engineer, understanding the concept of how a ship moves through space, the various elements within the starship, and you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, this plays right into the Sean's theory that it's the she's the ideological officer. Her rank is there purely for political reasons, and when she's actually thrown into the meaning of her rank, she's like, oh, I don't know.
She's totally out of her depth.
Got me. Moment number two that he likes, when Picard goes on the secret mission and Ronnie Cox takes command of the Enterprise, Troy goes to him to whine about how he isn't touchy-feely enough. His response is something like, first, I'm not Captain Picard. Second, we're on the brink of war. I don't have time for this namby-pamby crap. Third, don't ever wear pajamas on my bridge again. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Put on your fracking uniform.
I like that.
I always felt like that was a way for them to kind of get her into a normal uniform and explain why. Because she kind of stopped wearing the pajamas after that.
I think that she wore the pajamas because they were the most revealing outfits they could put on her.
Yeah. They didn't.
Right?
They wanted to get away from the mini skirt uniforms that they had in the original series because that was just too far. But they wanted to have, you know, they couldn't give up having a revealing uniform for Troy.
Yeah, you have the revealing figure-hugging outfit that looks like she came up for Pilates class.
Did you notice that the uniforms in Next Generation get looser over the 7-year run?
You know why? I actually saw an interview that read an interview that Patrick Stewart gave to like a BBC fan site, and he said that originally, you know, they had the spandexy uniform costume to wear, and he was having back trouble. He went to go see his doctor, and it turns out that the costume itself was, you know, compressing his spine. So they had to redesign the outfits to make him looser at the top.
It was a non-ergo uniform.
Exactly.
Which was really stupid because this is the future. They should have figured all that stuff out by then.
Okay, before we go further, I'm just going to throw in this one last bit from Star Trek that bothers me. Okay, so you wear these thin cloth, you know, outfits, but you go into an extremely hazardous planet. Shouldn't you wear like some sort of, you know, environmental suit or something so you don't get poked by a plant
infected? They get better at that later on, especially in Voyager and Deep Space Nine, where they put on spacesuits from time to time and put on hazard suits from time
to
time.
But it just seems like,
but you're right,
you go like, to,
especially in the original series and early parts of Next Generation, they're on the gas planet, you know, with the with the dangerous toxic chemicals, and they've got a little mask on, like, boy, you know, this is all I really need because this spandex is so space age and tough, it'll protect me from anything. You know, or a hostile situation where you might get shot, you know, you'd have no idea, like, nah, I'm just wearing my spandex. It's bulletproof. It's Kevlar spandex.
Which would stop energy weapons, but
yeah, it absorbs energy. But that's the thing, is it never does, right? They go down with the stupid spandex on, and then all of a sudden, bam, so red shirt guy's dead in the corner, bleeding out.
But aren't they all red shirts, really?
And the rest of them are all stunned because they, you know, were wearing nothing but spandex, and it didn't absorb anything. It didn't help.
The future is going to be so crazy.
Yes, because, and anyone in the audience who doesn't realize this should know, Star Trek is an accurate prediction of our future.
Yes.
And if you don't believe that, just look back on the eugenics wars of the 90s.
Yes, really. I mean, you think about it, and then Khan and the Botany Bay.
It all came true, just as foretold. All right, let's move on to Jayesh is back from Mumbai.
Jayesh.
Yes, from India. Has a few points to make since he just downloaded the previous 5 or so episodes. Number one, swine flu has even spread in India. 46 cases have been reported as of yesterday, 2 even in the capital of the country, New Delhi. Of course, they're calling it H1N1, because that's the name of the virus. I guess swine flu just doesn't sound so great, and it makes people afraid of pork. But Pork Producers Association would rather it be called H1N1. But, we are at, what, level 6 pandemic?
And it's weird because, you know, I think a lot of people had misunderstanding. I think, you know, the fear factor goes both ways. I think there's some people who take it over the edge where it's like, you know, I need to wear, you know, a plastic moon suit over my head and body the entire time.
Right.
And then I think
– because the pandemic refers to how fast and far it's spreading.
Yes.
Not how lethal it is. But people think level 6 means it's killer.
It basically means how far that disease has spread across the globe. Pandemic.
Right. It doesn't talk about its fatality level.
But I also think there are people who take it too loosely. It's like, there's nothing to worry about. It's like, you know, where it's like, you know, they throw caution to the winds, so to speak, and they just kind of brush off any kind of concern about it. It's one of those things where it's, you know, you don't go overboard, but at least show some concern, like wash your hands.
Yeah,
or,
exactly. Take some precautions, but, you know, in moderation. I as far as I know, swine flu has been deemed a rather mild infectious disease, right? I mean, you can die from it if you don't take care of it, you have complicating factors or other diseases or poor medical care, misdiagnosis. I mean, that's true of influenza A that comes around every year. It kills people. Swine flu doesn't seem to be any more virulent or dangerous than that.
And you have to remember.
So exactly, I mean, what you're saying is appropriate, which is wash your hands, eat right, get exercise, plenty of sleep, drink fluids.
And, you know, if you're sick, you know, don't come into work and spread it around you know, the office. I'm talking to two particular people out there.
Go ahead. Name them if you want to.
Actually, I can't because it's you know who I'm talking about.
Okay. fine. Anyway, so yeah, swine flu is one of those things that's going to be on the recaps of this decade, you know, like it's going to be one of the trends.
And you mean like the Y2K?
The swine flu scare? Yeah, totally like that.
My concern is if people, like, you know, people might think, well, oh, this wasn't a big deal, and the next time there's another case like this, people take it very, you know, blasé.
Because there was so much hype and scare tactics and fear-mongering early on that it has that backlash effect. Thankfully, pandemics don't happen all that often to where we, you know, we probably will have forgotten about swine flu really by the time the next one happens, hopefully, if everything goes the way it has gone in the past. So the last big one we had was really what, the 80s or was it early 90s?
Is HIV considered a pandemic? Because I think that was the last big...
Maybe. I think it did get to a pandemic level at some point.
Where
it ever got as high as swine flu. I don't know that it has. Mm. Don't know that it hasn't, really, honestly. All right. Point number two from Jayesh, Iran. Oh boy, I have been watching the news and it just makes me go wow every time I look at what really the government is capable of. Even on Buzz Out Loud, the guy from Iran, that's Siavish, mentioned how social networking sites were down. I think social networking has become the most powerful medium since the telephone.
Wouldn't necessarily disagree with that statement,
sure.
Although I think it's, I think it's one of those things where it's more about the internet and the tools available on it.
Now you've taken part in this turning your avatar green on Twitter thing.
Yes.
Are you also changing your location? Some people are changing their location to Tehran.
Yeah, I did it all at once. Yeah. And, I'll tell you the only reason generally I don't do political things just because, there's so many nuances and stuff to it, but when I saw the amount of violence that was perpetrated by the actual security forces, it kind of riled me up a little bit.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I think the changing location to Tehran is a practical measure that could actually help if you're a regular blogger, because what's happening is, from what I understand, and I don't have 100% understanding this, but they're trying to filter and block the internet to keep people from getting the word out or communicating with each other on social networks. And so people are using proxies in Iran to get around the filters. And so then the next step was the government was looking for anyone who posted from the Iranian time zone or with a location of Tehran. You know, like some things are location-based, like Twitter, you can set a location to Tehran, and then trying to go after people that way. And so the response was, if everyone changes their time zone to Iran's time zone and posts as if they're in Tehran, then it will flood the internet and they won't be able to tell who's really from Tehran and who isn't. And I think that's a practical measure that could work. But the turning the thing green is just sort of a solidarity move, right? It doesn't have any practical.
It's totally a show of moral support.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's to let people inside Iran know that there are people out there who are there to support them, if not directly with kind of, you know, money or kind of political clout, but to say that, hey, you're not alone, you know, you're not in this alone kind of thing. There are people out here who are listening to your cries, to your particular viewpoints and stuff. So it's more along that line. It's not like you're trying to, you know, turn everything green and hopefully kind of confuse the Iranian authorities, because it
into
won't do much of
anything. Everyone's Irish or something.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird because, you know, as was mentioned on the boards, you know, it goes into the whole issue of whether or not, you know, doing this somehow kind of, gets people involved in Iranian affairs who are not Iranian or Iranian citizens. And it's one of those kind of complex questions that dovetail a lot of subjects, you know, sovereignty, whether or not, you know, your viewpoint, viewpoints, who's right, who's wrong, relative viewpoints.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, and that's where my thinking is still sitting. I'm not against turning your avatar green, and I've almost done it a couple times myself, but I haven't quite taken the jump. And a lot of where my brain is right now is student revolution in Iran brought the Shah down and put this government in place. Student revolution in Iran right now is on the side of Mousavi, who is, while an opposition candidate,
conservative,
a ruling council approved opposition candidate.
Yep.
So it's not that I'm against the green avatar and support for, you know, like democracy in Iran, but is this supporting democracy in Iran?
It's
supporting an accurate vote count, but it's not really democracy when not everyone is free to run for the office. And that's absolutely true.
I totally agree. And for me personally, that's not specifically why I did it. It was
There's lots of reasons to do it. Exactly.
It's less about democracy that everyone's been kind of pushing out, and it's more about free speech for me.
Okay. And that's fair. That's definitely fair.
You know, I totally agree. I mean, you know, the original revolution in that toppled the Shah was actually a combination of both student-led and religious-led factions within Iran that worked together to overthrow the Shah. So, it's not about political system for me. It's just being able to say what you want to say without having the fear of government's repercussion.
And let's leave the green avatar behind, because that's not really the only reason I'm thinking about this, obviously. I don't know that if Mousavi is, you know, they find what if somehow
if
magically
did.
They say, okay, you're right, the vote count was off, Mousavi wins. I don't think things radically change in Iran.
Oh, however, no, they totally won't.
However, at this point, the disturbance has gone so far that I'm starting to think, gosh, you know what? Maybe there's a chance they could actually change things in Iran, that this could, because that's what happened when the Shah got toppled. There were protests in the streets, and the Shah was cracking down, and he was bringing the Ayatollah back out of exile to try to, you know, pacify people. And because the protests got started in the first place, they snowballed and snowballed and snowballed until they brought the Shah down. And no one really thought that was going to happen at the very beginning. So, and that's where we are now. Now, it could easily sputter out. And not end up, but it's like, well, geez, you know, I mean, that's a much more exciting possibility. Just getting Mousavi to win the election, yeah, okay, he's definitely preferable to Ahmadinejad in my opinion, but it doesn't fundamentally change things. But the fact of the matter is, what the ruling council has done is set up a possibility that things could radically change in Iran, and that was a big mistake on their part.
And it's kind of weird because, you know, if you look at it through the lens of not being totally impartial, it's merely a vote rigging scandal, and this is, you know, this is essentially
United States. We didn't all go out in the streets and start throwing bottles around.
But you know, it's funny because in some ways I don't think
Chicago to burn down three times by now if that was the case.
I think it's for many of those students, I think it's just a frustration, and they finally have an object, a vessel in which to pour that frustration into. And I think that's what you're seeing. I don't know realistically how far that will go, because, you know, as far as I know, the amount of demonstrations have been cut as the authorities have flooded, you know, police and security forces into Tehran. But it could be one of those things that gets nurtured over time that could lead to eventual, you know, change in the government, or not. You know, it's not this simple kind of ideological, you know, strong man in government against the oppressed people. There are large sections, even more about half, maybe half the population of Iran that believes and has faith and puts their support behind the current system.
Yeah.
I think some people, some of the stuff I've read, I think it's kind of fantasy land where it's just going to be this great flowering of progress and progressive thought in Iran, if only the Shah, or not the Shah, if the,
well, yeah,
the Ayatollah.
A Freudian slip there, yeah. If only the current all-powerful ruler in place.
And you know, and ultimately this goes back to a larger theme in my belief, in that you really can't base a government solely on, oh, they're left wing or they're right wing, they're this or that. You know, all, you know, what's the old saying? You know, all, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, it's one of those things. I think this is why, you know, this could be an argument for term limits, not so much for Ahmadinejad, but for, you know, the Guardian Council and the Ayatollah kind of thing, where
that's going to take a revolution. You're never going to have the Guardian Council, unless it happens over a long, slow period of time, give up the power they have. That's why they're there. I mean, what they messed up, in my opinion, was they have these elections as a safety valve so that the folks who do want to feel like they have a say in government get to feel like they have a say. They get to pick this president who's the public face and who is on a short leash. And why would you fix the vote when you've already said only these four people can run?
Well, what's ironic is...
Why'd you even approve Mousavi to run if you didn't want him to win? If you weren't okay with him winning? You know, I mean, or the other possibility is maybe the vote wasn't fixed. Ahmadinejad actually won.
Well, that's part of the... And it's because it's so complicated, it's so hard to get, you know, straight factual information out of there. A lot of people saying, you know, Mousavi probably did lose.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, Ahmadinejad probably won by, you know, maybe a single percentage point. And like, you know, you're looking at maybe 9,
it's
maybe
like a
10%.
Situation.
Yeah.
You know,
but
it's too,
you know,
close to call.
The Guardian Council decided, well, you know, just to be on the safe side, we'll make it look like he had a landslide.
Uh-huh.
And,
I see.
And you know what I mean? And it's like, you know, well, maybe if they just left well enough alone, you know, they wouldn't have all these issues, but they were just so worried about things getting out of hand that they, in fact, you know, had a self-fulfilling prophecy.
All right. Well, your Skype connection is starting to degrade a bit.
Sorry.
So our apologies for that. But you're intelligible. I think we'll kind of bail before it gets even worse, or one of us just starts or stops making sense. But keep the conversation going. Thanks to everybody who posted. A lot more from Justin and Tech Priest on their ideas about things like DDoS attacks being waged around the world on behalf of the Iranian student protests, sort of a cyber war going on there. Or Justin saying he admires the Mousavi followers and what they're pulling off. So read why he says that. At subbrilliant.com/EMW. That's on the comments for episode 161. Or if you'd like to make some comments on what we said on this episode, of course, look for the posting for episode 162.
Cool. Bye.
See you later.